Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 7-year-old David was playing in the living room when suddenly he lunged at his mother and began punching and hitting her. Seeing David's loss of control, his father wrapped his arms around him and carried him, kicking and screaming, up to his bedroom. There he held his son down while telling him softly over and over again that he could calm down and feel better and talk with his parents. David quieted and later cried and apologized to his parents. What does it mean when a bright, healthy, capable child has such outbursts? This is a symptom of sensory integration dysfunction. From a parent's perspective, how can we identify such problems in our children? And then, what can we do? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Here to speak with us today are two experts in this field. Dr. Lynn Balzer-Martin is a pediatric occupational therapist. Her specific focus is in on-site screening of nursery school children. She is a single parent with a 15-year-old son. We're glad to have you with us, Dr. Balzer-Martin.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Mrs. Carol Stock-Kranowitz has worked for 23 years as a teacher of movement and music to young children. She has written The Out of Sync Child, a helpful and reassuring book for parents, and has two grown sons. Welcome, Mrs. Kranowitz.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Balzer-Martin, what is sensory integration?
Sensory integration is the term we use to describe a theory that was first developed by an occupational therapist doing some pioneering work in the 1960s. Her name was Dr. Jean Ayers. And what she has postulated is that the senses that we use in order to operate from moment to moment in life are really more extensive than what we would normally think of. If you ask most people, what kind of information are we using from moment to moment to decide what we're going to say and what we're going to do? Most of us would answer looking and listening, vision and hearing. And while that's very true, there's some other very important sensory information that develops so automatically in most children and most of us that we don't even think about it. And there are three of these senses which we're most focused on in this theory. One of them would be your sense of touch. Another would be your body position sense. And a third one would be your sense of gravity and movement. And it's inefficiency in these sensory areas that we're talking about when we say sensory integration dysfunction. So we're all using these senses all the time. When they don't serve us as well as they should, that's when we have some problems. And those problems could either be in skills that give children difficulty, things like large and small motor activities or language abilities or even social skills. Also, it can affect temperament. It can affect how comfortable children may or may not be in everyday situations. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that today.
Mrs. Kranowitz, your book is entitled The Out of Sync Child. What does the title mean?
The title refers to every child in the world at one point or another. But specifically, I wanted to write about the child who's bright and able in many, many ways, yet bewilders his significant grown-ups. This is a child who may dig in his heels and refuse to participate in an activity that is ordinarily pleasurable for other children his age. For instance, going out on the playground may make him very uncomfortable because he doesn't like to take his feet off the ground or get dirty. Or sitting on the rug at circle time to hear a story may be impossible for this child who is uncomfortable being very close to other children. The proximity to others can make him feel threatened. So the out-of-sync child is the one who shows unusual reactions to ordinary sensations. There are three things that we can look for: frequency, intensity, and duration of an unusual response. And that means, let's say a child has a tactile problem. He's not processing touch sensations efficiently and really freaks out when it's time to do finger painting. Well, if this child has a reaction to that every day, if the intensity of his reaction is extraordinarily strong. And if it continues, if the child doesn't forget it and get on with what else is happening at school, you might look at that child and say, you know, I think there's something with the finger painting. He doesn't like to get his hands in it. I wonder why. Parents and teachers often don't have the understanding to recognize sensory integration dysfunction in children. So it's so easy to misread children's behavior as being noncompliant or deliberately antagonistic. What we need to remember, though, is these children want to do what all children want to do. They want to do what comes naturally. They can't.
So these behaviors are ways of dealing with a real problem. When they dig in their heels or they suggest something else, it's their way of coping with the fact that they somehow can't do what it is that they're expected to do.
That's absolutely right. They do what they must do to survive and to function.
Dr. Balzer-Martin, what are some other characteristics of children with sensory integration dysfunction and some examples of how it affects their behavior?
Building on my first comments about the three sensory areas that we're really dealing with in this theory, children can have too much or too little sensitivity to some of these kinds of areas, I'll mention in a moment, and they can also just not be what we call processing, using the information efficiently. So those are two different things. How clearly the information comes through to them, as well as do they have a normal degree of sensitivity or sometimes too much or too little or both. We can have children who are over and under sensitive to the same kind of thing. Let's talk about touch first. We want to make sure that children can get information from touch, because as Piaget tells us, in that sensory motor stage, children are moving around and exploring using their hands quite a bit. And that's in fact how their eyes kind of learn to tell us certain attributes of things, is because we've put the eye and the hand together to feel them and learn about them. So you want children to be able to get good information, kind of learn through the skin. That's an important way of learning. When you talk about sensitivity to touch, there are children who are overly sensitive, children who, as Carol was alluding to, may not feel comfortable in a circle because someone might bump them or touch them, might be very threatened if somebody gets too close when they're standing in line behind them. Their clothing might bother them tremendously in terms of always cutting out the tags and finding everything except sweats to be too itchy and uncomfortable.
Sock seams.
Seams in the socks, that's a good one too. So that's oversensitivity to touch, or what we might say hypersensitivity. But other children, or even in the same child, you might see undersensitivity to some kinds of things. For example, children who have a history where they never cried when they got their shots at the doctor, their immunizations. It just didn't seem to bother them. Or they fall down and scrape their knee enough that it bleeds and get up and walk right away. No fuss, no bother. They don't want you to do anything about it. And the next would be your body position sense. And with that, it's really important to know where your head and arms and legs are when you're not looking at them, because that has a lot to do with being coordinated for sports, let's say, and physical recreation. It also has a lot to do with your self-confidence, that you know when you're walking past a table or another person where you are in space and where they are, and that you don't bump or trip because of a lack of that awareness. And the third one is the gravity and movement sense. And here again, children need to process the information to get it coming through clearly. And they can also be both too sensitive, the child who doesn't want to run around on the playground, who is the one who says, I'll sit and read a book instead, or children who are undersensitive, who seem to never stop moving, or rocking, or jumping, or spinning. And one very important connection with that is that these are some of your same children who are being called attention deficit or hyperactive nowadays, and we think for a number of these children there is a sensory integration basis for the problem. And sometimes using occupational therapy might be a wiser way to begin to approach that than thinking about medications as a first line of intervention.
Right in line with this, it's time to really talk about how the screening happens. Mrs. Kranowitz, how is sensory integration dysfunction screened?
Let me tell you how we do it at a nursery school in Washington St. Columbus Nursery School. It's where Lynn Balzer Martin came in 1987 and said, I am concerned about working with the children I see ages 8, 10 or so who are having social and academic problems at school. And if only we could have found that there was some sensory problem when they were little, and if only we could have had some early intervention for these children, they would have been much more successful. But there was no way of testing these little guys. So Lynn came up with the idea of doing a pilot project, and were we interested at our little school? So of course we were. And we began this pilot project in 1987. The screening is unique because it's quick. It's not a test. It's looking to see if children have the basic skills they need for smooth development. It looks at the whole child from three vantage points. One is the parents fill out about a 20-question sensory motor history. The teachers fill out a checklist of the child's skills in the classroom. Can the child put on his coat, hold a pencil, tolerate touch stimulation? Basic questions that any teacher could answer. And then the children come into a room two at a time, and Lynn, as the occupational therapist, and I, as her assistant, walk the children through about 12 activities, and then Lynn, with her skills as a therapist, can make qualitative judgments about their skills. Then these three parts are put together. We sit down with the school director and sometimes with the child's teachers. If a child is young, we might say, let's hold this child at school another year, give her another chance to grow. Her inefficiency could be basic immaturity. But if the patterns seem consistent among the three avenues of observing the child, then we might say, let's call the parents in and suggest that they go ahead and have a full evaluation of this child. And we get a lot of parents who come and say, oh, there's nothing wrong with my child, except he just needs to go and run at the playground 4.5 hours every afternoon. And, of course, he only eats crunchy foods and needs to have a very, very hot bath. But there's nothing wrong with him. But we heard that this school is very tolerant for children like that.
Mrs. Kranowitz, could you talk just for a second or two about how teachers and parents could access Dr. Balzer Martin's screening methods?
Yes, indeed. The Balzer Martin preschool screening is available from St. Columbus Nursery School or from the Developmental Delay Registry, and those two addresses are in the resources of my book. The manual sells for $60, and we would be delighted to send it out to anyone who needs it.
Dr. Balzer Martin, what causes sensory integration dysfunction?
Often we don't know the specific cause for a given child. And I think that's important to say because, for example, I see a number of children who were premature infants, and parents will say to me, is the sensory integration dysfunction caused by the prematurity? And all I can answer is, I can't say that it is not, but for every child like yours, I see five others who have no history of prematurity. So that it is, to some degree, a mystery, and it's also important to know that even if we could say that a child being premature by a certain number of weeks or having certain complications, you know, as a neonate, even if we could say that we could identify a cause, the intervention and the things we want to do to improve things wouldn't be any different. Given that there are people who have postulated that there's a genetic connection, certainly many of the children I see, the mother and or the father will say, I was like this as a child, or mm-hmm. the grandparents were, or you know, even in some families, more than one child. And there are some other kinds of things that have been guessed at. But I would say most of the time for any given child, we're not certain of the cause, but we do have a lot of answers to offer.
Well, that's even more important.
Yes. In which case, we need to sort of know what parents can do. Mrs. Kranowitz, if parents learn their child has these problems, What things can they do or should they not do?
Think developmentally. Try to give your child every opportunity to do the things that children have enjoyed doing since time began. Let them get outside, get dirty, and run around and fall down a few times and find out what it feels like. That would be good for them. Parents need to think active, not passive.
In terms of themselves or the children?
In terms of the children. Sitting around and becoming skillful with a video game is not really building sensory motor skills in children. Kids need to get out and touch and move and do. That's how they learn. And at home, parents can offer play opportunities that include a lot of swinging and sliding, rolling down the hill or sledding down the hill, rocking in a hammock, jumping on a little trampoline to get some of that jolt into their muscles and joints that kids need and love. And these are some great ideas for sensory integration. I would say go to the playground every day if it's possible and give your child hard work to do, opening doors, carrying loads, pushing wagons, lugging buckets. It's so easy to do the work for the child because it goes faster for a grown-up to open a door himself.
How true. Yeah.
Carol, also I'm wondering about, as an educator, how you think parents might orient themselves when talking about, you know, preschool and what works when you're thinking about sensory integration.
Right. Think about a school that thinks developmentally and looks at the whole child. I would advise parents to shy away from schools where academics in the preschool years are stressed. You know, learning how to spell spaghetti or read spaghetti is not anywhere as meaningful to a child as tasting and smelling and stirring spaghetti, getting their hands and mouths into it. So, you know, it's the doing and the playing. That's very, very important.
Dr. Balzer-Martin, what kinds of treatment are used to help a child with sensory integration dysfunction become more competent?
If a child has sufficient need as determined by a full evaluation, a full assessment by an occupational therapist, then it may be that sensory integration treatment, directly working with an OT once a week or twice a week for a period of time, may benefit the child. What that treatment does is it tries to help change these thresholds and improve the way that a child can deal with the sensory information. So rather than practicing skills, for example, if you have a youngster whose balance is not very good, rather than having them practice hopping and walking on a balance beam, if they're getting sensory integration therapy, they would be using a lot of suspension equipment, inner tubes and hammocks and special swings that hang from the ceiling, and that can give the child some very specific kinds of sensory information to stimulate that gravity and movement system and to change the thresholds or to improve the way the child gets the information, so that the treatment is actually quite a lot of fun for the children. It doesn't look like something you're doing because there's something you're not good at. And it's also very creative in terms of the children have a lot of say about the pretend aspects of it. So it's quite a bit more sophisticated than exercise and can really help to change this neurological foundation.
But that's what we call occupational therapy.
That is when an occupational therapist uses sensory integration treatment techniques. Occupational therapists can work with children to do other things, but if the problem is sensory integration, those are the techniques of choice that the therapist would use.
Mrs. Kranowitz, what should schools and daycare centers be doing to accommodate children with these kinds of characteristics?
Oh, Sandy, I'm so glad you asked me that question. I hope that teachers will read my book, The Out of Sync Child, Recognizing and Coping with Sensory Integration Dysfunction. In it, they will find lists of characteristics of children who have sensory problems. And then, aha, that's what makes Timmy tick. Also, I have lots of ideas in the book that I think teachers and parents can use at home and at school. A school could also have an occupational therapist come in for a consultation, and the OT could then share ideas about the playground and maybe observe some children and give some ideas for appropriate indoor activities. Third thing schools and daycare centers can do is follow the children's lead. When children are having fun, often they're doing things that are good for sensory integration. I remember I used to build an obstacle course every day out on the playground, and one little boy was particularly interested in rearranging all of the equipment that I so carefully laid out. And one day, when my back was turned, he had taken a big board and put it on top of a railroad timber and made a teeter-totter out of this board. And I thought, of course, that it might be dangerous, and I fussed with it a little bit, but he really, really wanted this. He liked it. And I looked at his face. I saw this child who was definitely out of sync becoming in sync just by balancing left and right and left and right. So I left his teeter-totter in the obstacle course, and that child now is about 20 years old, and I use his idea still and watch children love it because it helps their sensory integration. I'd like to suggest some things that we do at our little school that are so wonderful. We have lots of tire swings. Many children benefit from rotary movement. That's going round and round. We have lots of regular swings for back and forth swinging. We had a seesaw designed that meets all the regulations. It has a lot of wood chips underneath, so if children fall off, they have a soft landing. We have what we call a Batman pole, so kids can slide down. And all over, indoors and outdoors, we play a lot of games that help children stretch and grow and move and touch. I would suggest that for every school.
Dr. Balzer-Martin, what advice do experts recommend for parents of children with these kinds of problems? And can you suggest some do's and don'ts for parents?
The first thing would be to have an evaluation, because I've had families who live farther away from a location where an OT who knows how to do this kind of treatment might be available. And they're saying, well, if I can't get the treatment, why have the testing? I think that it's a real do for parents to get a full evaluation, because when you know your own child better from a sensory viewpoint, first of all, you will stop blaming yourself and your parenting for any of the problems, because you realize that your child came into the world with certain kinds of vulnerabilities and preferences. Secondly, you will be able to get some advice about how to have your family run more smoothly, even if there's not direct treatment. Sometimes a child who is very over and under sensitive to things is so hard to make content that the whole family shapes its logistics around this child, because they just can't stand certain things and they just can't lighten up about it. And sometimes friends and relatives feel you're indulging and spoiling the child, but you're doing it because the child needs to survive. That's why he's doing what he's doing. And then you have to survive it by giving in, because you're not going to change the child. So I think there are a lot of helpful do's and don'ts that can come to parents from knowing the full picture, even if direct treatment is not an option. Primarily, I think, I would say to parents, don't wait. Don't let any health or allied professional tell you that a sensory integration problem cannot be diagnosed until a child is 5 or 6 or 7 years old, because the treatment techniques we use are built on what we call the plasticity of the brain, the ability of a young child's brain to change the way it operates. And therefore, the younger we start, the further we'll progress, the quicker we'll progress, the more cost-effective it will be.
Thank you very much.
And special thanks to both of you for helping us better understand sensory integration dysfunction, Dr. Lynn Balzer-Martin and Mrs. Carol Stock-Kranowitz.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for having us.
We have a gift to offer caller number 2 on our listeners' poll today, an autographed copy of our guest, Carol Stock-Kranowitz's book, The Out of Sync Child. Please call us at 1-800-791-8573 to answer the following question. What have you found to be the most helpful resource for parenting advice, and why?
To answer, call us at 1-800-791-8573. We'd like to send you Mrs. Kranowitz's book. You can also reach us through your local station or by email at parentspur@aol.com. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.